Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your host of The Creative Alchemist, and we are that talk show that gives you business from many different perspectives. We have talked about financial planning, leadership, changing or starting the new year, and we're about to go into another new year. We've been in reset. This is Reset 2020, and businesses are looking at things none of us have seen before. So this has been a very interesting year for business. Many businesses are meeting challenges that they've never seen before, and our commitment here at The Creative Alchemist is to support businesses to go through this transformation and support you through your own transformation, personally, professionally. And we are also looking at what are some of the other opportunities that you can exploit in this kind of environment. And surely they are there. And today, as usual, we will have a very special guest. And before we introduce her, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Thank you very much. And hi, it's Lori Miller, interior designer. Super excited about our guest tonight. And thank you for listening to our podcast. Tonight's guest has managed an aftercare and a before school program and received a Master's of Science in Business, a Bachelor of Arts in History, and was able to transition to ghostwriting and writing articles, editing, proofreading. So it's kind of an interesting story, and we're going to hear how that pivot was made. So thank you all for listening. If anybody has any thoughts or opinions or wants to call in with questions, I'm just going to preface that by you can call in at 516-387-1640. And Lisa, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and welcome, and thank you for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. Yes, I've been in education for over 25 years. I manage a before and after school child care program, and I love it. But I always had a passion for writing. When I was 9 years old, that was my actual first public work. I wrote a poem. Just wrote a poem, fourth grade, and it was published in our school newspaper. So that was my first actual published poem, and my parents were very proud. So
I can only imagine. Wow.
Yeah. So from there, at 9 and 10 years old, I was trying to write a book, and that never actually happened. But I did try to write a book. It was just a story about me and my brothers and just like some of our things that we would do on the weekend. And one of those things was, in preparation for church. So that, like I said, that never really came to fruition. But I asked my mom for carbon paper. Do you guys remember what that is? Does anybody know what carbon paper
is? Yes.
I've seen it. The stuff that turned your fingers blue?
Yeah, it did, because I wanted to make a copy so that I would have two manuscripts. I don't know why. I just thought that would be the right thing to do. So my mom purchased me carbon paper, and I used that, and I tried to write the Great American Novel at like 9, 10, and 11 years old. I start and never stop. I mean, I would start, and I would never finish. That's what I'm trying to say. So I did that, and I just went on through school, and I always had an appreciation for the English language. I love words. My mom was very instrumental in my brothers and I receiving an education and making sure that we had an appreciation for education. My father, he was inspirational as well, always encouraged us to be thinkers and to pursue educational goals as well and speak clearly and properly. I'm not the best at that, but he definitely encouraged us to do that. So that's basically how I got my start, and fast forward through the educational system and my college days, I ended up just writing articles. I just had this passion to resume the writing because I hadn't written for several years. And a friend of mine invited me to write for a magazine, which is Social Magazine. And I started doing that, and that's how I got my start 5 years ago, and I've been at it ever since.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, it's really awesome, especially to get paid first time out the gate, right? That's phenomenal.
Yes, thank you.
So you've written for, yeah, congratulations.
Go ahead,
you've written
Lori.
For other magazines as well, right?
Yes, I've written for 2, Social Magazine and Shoes and More Magazine. I've written for them both. And I wrote for Social about 1.5 years, and I wrote for Shoes and More about maybe six months. And I enjoy doing both of those. And then after mm-hmm. Shoes and More, I started the ghostwriting. And I never thought that ghostwriting would be for me. I didn't know if my ego could take it because it wouldn't be my work per se. I would be mm-hmm. the person, the behind-the-scenes person. So I didn't know if my ego could take that, but I found joy and a passion in helping other people tell their story and put it out there for the world to experience.
Mm-hmm. Very
so does that mean people who are so one of the things that you hear, there are lots of really smart people out there who understand their industry really well, except either they don't have the time, they don't write well, or sometimes people who are really smart and good at their profession will write in such a technical way that it will go over the heads of their audience. Is that one major reason for using a ghostwriter? Because either you don't have the time, you don't write well, or you don't know how to speak, you don't know how to present your topic in the language that most people will digest.
That's exactly right. All of those things are exactly right, Ted. People come to me a lot of times because they just simply don't have the time, and they have a story, a good story that they want to get out there, a book that they want to publish and or have printed, and they just don't have the time to do it, or the patience, and that's okay. Because or the skill set in terms of being able to write, so they come to me. I've spoken with different people from different walks of life, different educational backgrounds, and I'm the person that they come to when they have that combination of and or they just like you said, Ted, it can get bogged down in technical terms or terminology that may be not so easily grasped by your general public, or they need things in layman's terms, perhaps, so they come to me.
Interesting. I mean that's a talent by itself. That's a great skill to have. In some ways, that makes you like a translator.
It does. It does. It really does. And it can be.
Go ahead.
I'm
you
sorry.
Can do what?
It's interesting that you say that, because one of the questions that I ask my clients is, who's your demographic? Who are you writing the book for?
Right.
Because that can dictate the voice and the tone and the language that you use in the book. So, for instance, I had a woman who, she was a recovering drug addict, and she wanted her book to be used in rehab centers. And she told me, she said, listen, I need this to be in very plain language, because some folk have, they may not have finished school, you know, she just gave me a breakdown of some of the demographics involved for her audience. And so I had to take that into consideration as I wrote her book. And while I was doing that, I also wanted to capture her voice so that it wasn't my voice, but her voice. So that's not always
right.
easy to do, but it's something I enjoy, that challenge.
So, you know, I when I was thinking about writing this up, I was thinking that, you know, there's a people use ghosting. You know, we've all heard the word ghost throughout our lives, including Casper, the friendly ghost, except people don't use the word ghosting in a very positive or friendly connotation. So ghosting now means someone just stopped communicating, they disappeared and have no contact with you. As a ghostwriter, it's almost like you're exactly the opposite of that. You're sort of like what you're describing there. You're kind of joined at the hip with someone who doesn't have the patience, the time, or doesn't speak the language of the audience. And you're kind of, it sounds like you have to have a really strong and intimate partnership between the amount of interviews and back and forth to make sure their message is clear. Am I characterizing this correctly, or do you just say, hey, what's your idea, and you just take it and write it and hand them a finished book?
No, it's a very intimate relationship. I usually require that we meet at least once a week and talk for and about an hour is usually enough time. And they tell me their story, and I write it, and then we confer to make sure that it's how they want it presented. So we, you know, we work closely, very closely together. And I almost insist upon it because, as I said previously, I really want to capture their voice, and it's really difficult to capture someone's voice if you don't spend any time with them. So,
right,
mm-hmm.
So you're surely not ghosting people.
No, I'm not ghosting at all. You're absolutely right. That's excellent because I don't, you know, I'm there live and in living color, and I learn about the people. I learn about their family. I learn about what they do. So it's more than just the story of the book. Sometimes the book is about them and their personal life. But I learn a lot about them as I write, more than will ever go into the book. But again, that's part of capturing the essence of that person.
Interesting.
Right, it's like being a wine reader.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
It's like being a mind reader. You know, you have to be able to get in their head. You have to be able to be them. You're kind of reading their mind so you know what they want to say and how they're going to say it.
This is true. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I'd like to talk more about the process before we do that. So you're writing books. Which topics, or do you have a favorite, or does it matter to you? Are you
I really
a subject
don't have
matter
a
expert?
No, I don't have a favorite. I just enjoy people sharing, first of all, just trusting me enough to share whatever their story is with me. That's part of the relationship, that you trust the person to where you feel, you don't feel judged, you don't feel critiqued, you trust them with that story. So I don't have a preference. Whatever person comes to me and says, hey, you know, I want to put pen to paper, or you put pen to paper, or fingertips to keyboard and make this come to life, and I say, okay, let's do it. And there hasn't been a work yet that I've done where I have not learned something or received some sort of inspiration from. I just worked with a guy who, he actually had a finished manuscript, and he wanted me to do copy editing for his book, and I did that. That book was so on fire till I was, it just sparked something in me you know, because I have to read through the entire work, and I usually end up reading through it several times. It just motivated me and inspired me. It sparked something in me, and I said, wow, you know, I really feel motivated to do more than what I'm currently doing, just reading his story. So sometimes I get that kind of inspiration out of it, just different things that I read, because I don't only ghostwrite, but I also edit, proofread, and do some other things. So.
Okay. All right. So then let me, and I want you to talk about those also. Let me ask you, so have you had the inspiration to just write your own book and stop ghostwriting?
Not, I go back and forth. And I've written some short stories, and when I'm writing, you know, I try to write every day. When I'm with or without a project, I try to write every day. And I write short stories, and I had a website, but that's recently been dismantled, and I'm in the process of putting together a new website. And I've posted short stories on my website.
How long is a short story? Is that like 20 pages, or what does that look like?
I think my last short story that I wrote was maybe 15 pages. It wasn't very long at all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was guessing. I had no idea. And as a writer, it sounds like any other professional, whether you play tennis or you're an engineer, you're doctors, you have to stay on top of your skills. So you practice often, it sounds.
Yes.
Interesting. Never thought of it that way. So, all right. So you are a professional writer, and you keep your skills up to par to be competitive.
I do.
I'm wondering if you go with specific topics, or if you write about, you know, certain things, or do you do everything across the board? Like, you know, if I wanted to write a book about design, or I wanted to write a book about health, or do you do anything?
Yes, I am open and receptive to any type of written word or work. I don't limit myself. I have yet to come across anything that I haven't liked. I've even done some business writing. So, I enjoy all of it. The only thing I haven't done is technical writing. And I know, technical writers, those are the people that write instruction manuals and things of that nature. I know I have a friend that's a technical writer. She wanted to be a writer, and she ended up getting a master's in technical writing, and she's like, it's awful. Like, Lisa, she said to me, and I never will forget this, she said, I write the things that people don't want to read. And that made me sad for her.
Not really funny, but wow.
The truth.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. No one wants to say that out loud.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. Very true.
So,
that's funny.
So how do you... So, you know, we talked about people who don't have time or patience, the writing skill, or they're too technical, too technical with their profession and don't know how to put it in layman's terms. So how do you even choose? How do you know? Maybe this is a better question. So everyone has a story. So I'm sure lots of manuscripts come across your desk. How do you know if, and maybe I'm asking two questions. So how do you know if something is marketable, and you know, you it sounds like you have your ear to the ground and you understand what readers like. How do you know that if something's marketable and people will want to read it, the story's good?
Well, there's a couple things I do. One, I'm in a reading group, a book club, and I have a lot of readers in my life, a lot of readers, people who, I mean, these folks, that's their thing, including my family and my friends and my book club. So, and that's a small pool, a very small pool of people. But I also look at what the market, what's out there. I go to Kindle. I look at what is selling. I look at the topics that are selling. I make it a point to Google frequently the top-selling books, the genres, the top-selling genres in the United States, the top-selling genres globally. And I just make it a point to be abreast of that because my clients ask me those questions, and they ask me what I think about their work, and I want to be honest with them and tell them. One thing that is very true in America, America loves a come-up story, if you will, or a bootstrap story is what they're called, where people just, you know, that come from nothing tell their story about how they've made it in life. We love those kinds of stories. The underdog stories are very popular. So those are the ways that I find out what America, Americans and people in general like to read about. Crime and mystery are very popular in the United States. Romance novels are very popular. Self-help books are very popular. And one of the number one selling books in the world is the Bible.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the number one selling book.
I think
it
is.
It's held that title. It's held that title for decades, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So have you had to tell someone, like, how do you tell someone their story is dull, boring, and no one will want to hear about it?
Well, that's a tough one. Let me see, how do I want to say this? Everyone, this is going to sound harsh, and I really don't mean it to sound harsh. Everyone thinks that their story is the story. And a lot of they are a writer. And it's a very delicate balance. And I try to avoid it if I can, but I like to be honest with people. And I try to just make suggestions like, hey, you know, why don't we try this angle or that angle, or, you know, to try to help them improve upon what their story is. And one big thing about doing that is finding out who your audience is. That's very helpful. And I'll come in and I can use my keystrokes to try to add life where there is no life or the lack of life. I don't know what that word is, but yeah. So that's a very hard thing to do that I don't like doing.
Do you do it often?
No, I don't. Usually the people that I have that come to me actually have very compelling stories. Like I shared with you guys about the woman that was a recovering drug addict. Her story was compelling. She was addicted to crack cocaine during the crack cocaine epidemic. So her story was very interesting. I had a gentleman that I worked with who he lived in a car with his family for 5 years. So
Wow.
And that story is phenomenal. I have a woman who her story was that she was a female police officer and she rose through the ranks in one of the larger cities in the United States. And not only was she a female police officer, but she was a black woman. So she tells her story. So that's an interesting story. It's I've had very few stories that come across my desk that have not been interesting. But the thing is about your story or your book, your finished product, is you have to market it. So
that's the hardest part,
marketing,
right?
That is the hardest part. Honestly, me coming in and helping you get it on paper, that in some ways is, first of all, that's the first step of the process, and it's almost one of the easier steps. If you're committed to the time that it takes to do it, that's one of the easier steps.
Interesting.
Right. So, if I may jump ahead a little bit. So you've been published, right? So if someone, I guess, it has you, wait, this is not going to be proper English, right? Has had you write if someone has had you write as a ghostwriter for them and they have this book, so now we're talking about marketing and all the things to get yourself out there, right, which any successful entrepreneur needs to know how to do, what's the process of getting published? What are the different types of publishers? Is it a misconception that you don't have to pay anything if you're with a quote-unquote real publisher, or do you have to pay on the back end somehow?
Well, let me address this. Let's do the self-publishing. Is the people I work with are people who are looking to self-publish to print their books.
Mm-hmm.
And the steps that are involved in that is once they finish the manuscript, and they it needs to be edited and proofed by a proofreader, and or both, which I recommend both, or you can hire a copy editor that will do both, and then they will purchase an ISBN number, which allows you to copyright your title, and your title is logged into the Library of Congress. So then you get a graphic designer, and interestingly enough, the graphic designer designs the barcode for your ISBN number, which I thought that was interesting. And then they do any other graphics you want for your book. You set your price, you promote it, and you have to have it typeset, and then you have it printed. And that's basically how you self-publish a book. If you go into some people still go through publishing houses and things of that nature, and it just depends. If you're a well-known person, let's say Martha Stewart, for instance, she has a lot of published work. Well, we know her books are going to sell, so she'll get her money. She'll receive her. She may get why can't I think of the word? She may receive money up front for her book. Because they know that it's going to sell, and then they balance it out afterwards in terms of how much it costs to print the book and all of that good stuff. But she's going to have her money, receive most of her money up front, as opposed to John Smith, who comes to Lisa Simmons, who wants to self-publish their book.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple questions in there. I think I answered them all. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I'm just wondering because there are some publishing houses where they may want you to put up, I don't know, like a small sum of money for the initial investment. And I don't know if they all do that.
They all don't. But that is very common. You know, they want you to have, for lack of a better way of saying it, skin in the game so that you can, so that you're committed to it. And there, especially like I was saying, if you're not as well known as some of, or like a celebrity or a well known author, then yeah, they may want you to put money up front.
Okay, so that is like a fairly standard industry-wide request.
Yes.
Sure,
yeah, they'll
are,
they'll have to, I guess, they'll have to put more money into you to market your book. So they want you to share the risk,
true.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's a risk for them.
It is. If you're not known, it is a risk. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. So I don't know how to ask this, but how many books, or do you think, or do you even know how many actually go to publication after you're done writing them? Like, do you ever get that? Do they send you a copy and say, thank you, we're published? Or, you know, like.
Yes, they do. Out of the three books that I've ghostwritten, two have gone to publish, have been published, and one has not. And I'm really not sure what happened with that particular work. It was an interesting work. It was about a woman who grew up in foster care. So she didn't publish it. And like I said, I'm not sure why. Usually, the other two people, they've kept me abreast of the work and they've sent me copies of the book. And during the steps of the publishing, when they go, after it leaves me, they've reached out to me and said, hey, you know, this is what we're doing and this is where we are with the process.
Very interesting. Yes, yeah, it's got to be so rewarding, right?
It really is. I really, like I said earlier, when I first came on, I really enjoy working closely with people to bring their story to life and just get it out there. And the pride that comes with it for that person is just a wonderful, enjoyable experience because it gives voice to people who may otherwise feel voiceless or feel like, oh, wow, I have this story I want to tell or share, and I don't know how to put it out there. I don't know where to go. I don't know how to do it, and that's when I come in. I receive referrals. That's how I receive the majority of my clients. I don't advertise, at least not yet. That's getting ready to change here in a few weeks. But I receive referrals, and I just say, hey, let's do it.
So after you look at someone's work, you say, let's do it, and that means you'll be a ghostwriter. You're going to have this very close and an enormous amount of communication with that person, getting to know them. Do you ever interview their friends or family to get another perspective of them?
No, I haven't. That's interesting that you said that because I've thought about that. I have not done that yet. But I feel like I know some of their family members because sometimes the story includes the family member, and which that can be touchy depending upon the nature of the story. But no, I have not done that.
Interesting. Okay. And so you usually write it, so can you be the ghostwriter, the editor, and the proofreader? Because I heard you say you suggest they do both editing and proofreading. So can you do all three? I mean, is that an industry standard for one person to do them all?
No, it's not. And I don't really want to do them all because you mean on the same project? Is that what I assume?
Right,
that's what you mean.
Correct, right. So you write the book about, you know, the birds and the bees, and Lori's the author. So a couple of questions. Does your name appear anywhere as a ghostwriter?
No, not unless it's agreed upon at the when we do the contract. When the contract is written, we line all of that out.
Okay. All right. So, Lori, you're writing a book about the birds and the bees, and you go to Lisa. She writes it for you.
Right.
And then I guess it just goes off to someone else to edit and proofread. Okay. All right. So what's the difference between an editor? And I'll give you my interpretation. And correct me if I'm off. The proofreader is someone who is there to only check for grammar, grammatical errors, to make sure it's grammatically correct, the sentences flow. The editor is the person who kind of does what people would say is the magic. So if you took Lori's book about the birds and bees, you would make it sexy. You're the one, as the editor, you're the one with your ear to the ground, and you understand what sells and how what people want to read, like how the reader wants it expressed to them. I think that's the best I can say it. How the reader wants the author to express things to them. And the editor is the one that makes all that happen, and the proofreader just does grammatical. Is that correct, or am I just off base?
No, you have a good grasp of it. Yeah, an editor will read the manuscript. They'll make suggestions about regarding clarity, about moving things around, and like you said, have their ear to the ground about what people want to read, what makes it engaging, and things of that nature. That's exactly right. The proofreader is more the nuts and bolts person who really gets into the grammar and sentence structure. They may even do some rewriting or with the permission of the author and just do some rewriting, light rewriting, and things of that nature.
Okay. So the author doesn't get out of this process. Even if they don't have time, they still have to be included, huh?
Most definitely.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if we can go back a little bit, right? Because, I mean, you're working in a children's field, right? Or in a field with children, daycare, after school. How do you help them with their writing, right? Because I would imagine that would be a fun thing. Let's do a book. Let's do, you know, whatever.
Well, when I'm not working hands-on currently with children. When I did, we definitely did writing. We definitely did writing exercises and a lot of reading. Typically, writers are usually readers, very much so. They go hand in hand. I guess maybe I'm stating the obvious, but typically it goes hand in hand. And working with the children, it was always fun because we would have freestyle or free writing where they could just write about whatever they wanted to, however they wanted to. And that would be a lot of fun. And it would be fun to get to have children that really didn't want to do it, encourage them to do it and see them do it and engage and excel. And another way to get them to be involved in writing was to write skits or plays. Children love to act out books, and at least the children that I work with did, and it was just a lot of fun. So engaging them in that way was very rewarding and insightful to their personalities, to how they think, to what they enjoy doing, and it gave them an avenue of expression.
That's so great. You know, I think kids do need to, you know, express themselves, and so it's an awesome thing.
And
you know,
and
I would bet that
if
you
Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jill.
No, I was going to say, I would bet that if you were really, like, hands-on, like, that could be so much fun for you. you know, if you had more of that intimate connection.
Mm-hmm. It was fun, and it helps them with the English language. There's so many words. I love words, and there's so many words, and it helps children. It exposes children to vocabulary. And
right.
Always encourage the children, don't limit yourself with vocabulary. I know I used to get teased because I would try to use these big words, and people would say to me, why are you trying to use these big words? I probably sound, you know, maybe I was sounding ridiculous at the time. I don't know. But I always tried to use, I wasn't trying to use them to sound smart. I tried to use them because I'm like, they're part of the English language. Why can't I use them?
Right, exactly. Right. Yep.
Absolutely. That's funny. I used to study the dictionary. So, like, every day I would learn, like, 5 new words, and I thought I can get through the whole big edition of Webster.
So that's funny.
I understand.
You should say
we could have had good conversations together, you and I.
Yes, because I didn't want to say that I used to do that because I'm like, I already sound corny. Do I really want to say I love the dictionary. And my mom,
when I was a kid,
they were kind of like encyclopedias, but not really. Or maybe they were vocabulary exercises in the back of these. And when she would braid my hair, we would read through these books together. And I absolutely loved it. That's when I developed my love for the English language, because I became exposed to all of these wonderful words.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and you learn how to use them when someone's reading to you and you're paying attention.
Yes.
No, it's such
and then
a
I would
fondness.
Go to school and get teased. Huh?
Then you'd go to school and be the brainiac.
Right.
Yeah, I would get teased. But my mother, she was an avid reader. I always saw her reading. And when, as an educator, people would say, well, how can I get my kid to do better in school? How can I get them to become more engaged in school? And I simply say, this is like the cheapest, easiest thing you can do is read to your kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Just read to them.
Mm-hmm.
10-15 minutes a night, tops. Or if, you know, I know people are busy working and we all have busy lives. Okay, then maybe on the weekend, maybe a Saturday or a Sunday night or a Friday night, You read to your child. That helps to cultivate that desire and that engagement. And as they get older, have them read to you.
Mm.
Just that simple.
Yeah, there are all kinds of studies that support the positive influence it has when you read to your children.
Mm-hmm.
It's very positive.
Very much so. And again, much like when I am working with my clients and we develop that intimate relationship, it's hard when you read with someone. Children naturally like to snuggle. So I remember my mom reading to my brothers and I, and we literally sit up under her as she would read to us. So you have that close contact, that physical contact, being in someone's too. Create that bond or enhance that bond there. And just a lot, it's amazing to me, a lot of people actually enjoy being read to. I know I do.
Do you really? Okay.
I do. I like to be read to. And I like reading to others, but I enjoy being read to.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Do I like being read? I do, but I don't pay attention. So I have to go off in my own
little
bed.
What are you doing? Are you on your phone while you're being read to?
No, I usually just fall asleep.
Oh, that's okay.
Kind of like Yeah, while someone's reading, it's like, you know, I'm off. It like triggers other thoughts, and then I'm kind of down the rabbit hole. And yeah, but I love to read. I definitely love to read. You know, I think that's one of the greatest things. It takes you in a whole nother world.
Have either of read a book together with a significant other? And by that I mean one reads, however you alternate it, one reads a chapter, one reads a page, the other one reads the next page or the next chapter, and it keeps you both fully engaged, and it becomes easier to talk about the book because you're going through it together. Have either of you tried that before?
No. I haven't. I can't answer for you.
some don't have the patience for that.
Right.
Some don't. I have read to a significant other, but I have yet to have a significant other read to me. That is something that I would love to do with a significant other. I think that would be beautiful.
Right, you're sharing this book. You're going through it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. just when you were talking about the children and intimacy, so and I've done that, and we were in, I think, Costa Rica, traveling on a bus that was driving around cliffs that, you know, had such beautiful views, but it was like a 5-hour ride. So, you know, we looked at the views and read some more, and the bus was packed, but, you know, it was our time together. So, mm-hmm. you know, in the park, you can do that anywhere, at home. And then you talk about it at you know, different points. So, if someone ever wanted to speak to you about, well, let me ask you this. This is, and maybe everyone asks you this question. So you ghostwrite, you edit, you proof. Which is your favorite of the three?
Ghostwriting is definitely my favorite of the three.
Okay. And if someone wanted to get a hold of you to ghostwrite for them, how would they do that?
They can call me or email me.
Okay.
And how
tell
would
where.
They call
tell
you
them where to
email?
Do that.
Okay, I'm just, guys, I do have a sense of humor, so I was really being kind of silly right there.
Oh, I remember, right? No, this is the United States. This is a country where they used to use smoke signals. I got it now. So they'd have to be able to write in smoke signals to send them across to you. But what if they have grammatical errors in their smoke signals? Are you going to respond?
I'm still going to respond to it, and I know Morse code. I learned Morse code. I think I was in fifth grade.
No kidding.
All right, we just hit Mensa. Sure, we hit Mensa level.
A silly question. If someone sends you an email with grammatical errors, do you correct them?
In my mind,
and they're asking
correct.
About your services. Do you just let that go and just deal with the, you know, the services they're requesting?
For sure, because I'm not going to. I'm too nice of a person to do that, Ted.
Okay.
I will correct them in my head, in my mind, as I read, but I would never say, hey. Hey, you need to fix this. No, I'm not going to do that. So anyway, let's talk about getting in touch with me. You guys ready? All right, here we go. To get in touch with me,
well,
I can review.
Sorry, I figured you had some grammar police in you somewhere. So I just wondered what that was like. Does it make you cringe, or you just have to say something But I got it. You just do it in your head, and you move forward.
I move forward. And there are things that people do that are kind of across the, just kind of, you know, across the board. That's just what they do. One thing, and then texting has just, oh, my gosh, texting is really, it's just, I don't know.
A disaster.
It's a decline in our, while I like texting, I don't like it all at the same time. But, yeah, so, you know, there, that bugs me. You guys are familiar with there, and there. You guys know the there, and there.
Oh, the right. Yeah, the different, right. People use them incorrectly, like your and your.
Yes.
Yeah, I've even seen then and than misused. So, yes, it happens.
Yeah, and then you have autocorrect, because I cringe when I send a text and I'm saying your, Y-O-U, apostrophe R-E, and then autocorrect will come in and type for me or put Y-O-U-R in place. I'm like, that is
right.
Not what, you know.
Right, I wanted to say.
Yeah, I'm just like, really? So, that happens. Am I the only one that's
okay.
Happened to? Please.
No.
Technology, while it's useful, can get in the way and be a nuisance a bit for someone who has mastery with language and grammar.
Yes. And I always say that I write better than I speak. That's just my thing. But I'm going to give out my information now.
Let's do it.
All right. So, my phone number.
Well, wait. I actually thought you were about to ghost us and give no information. So imagine
exactly.
The irony of a ghostwriter ghosting us, right?
No ghosting. Only love and communication.
Perfect.
Right.
How did they get a hold of you?
All right. My phone number is 614. That's the area code. 353-6978.
Okay.
I can also
email
be reached email Lisa. Now my name is spelled differently. It's LEAS as in Sam A dot Simmons SIMMON as in Nancy S at gmail.com. And my website will be live coming January 1. I'm going to go ahead and give out my website address.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It's left, L-E-F-T, as in left, like left hand, H-A-N-D, right, W-R-I-T-E, brain, B-R-A-I-N-E. Yeah. Oh, no,
that's
wait a minute.
Clever.
B-R-A-I-N. I can't spell. Oh, my God. Can we hit the
truth
edit
comes
button?
Out.
Oh, my God. I'm
wait,
so
wait. Hey, Lori, I have to tell you something, Lori. Her name is Lisa, L-I-S-A. She just misspelled it. That's all. So
right.
Now she wants the whole world. The whole world is just going along with
it. Oh, my God. You guys, listen, can we edit that part out? Oh, my God. Brain. You guys
that
know how to spell brain.
Me.
It's rain with a B.
Rain
oh,
with a B.
My website is. Oh, my gosh.
That's great.
Let me stop. Okay, we're getting ready to run. I'm being ridiculous. Let's see. Leftbrain.com is my website.
Okay. Very interesting.
Left
great.
Hand,
so give,
right
give
brain.
That, and give the phone number again if people would like to call you. and speak to you about any, whether it's ghostwriting, editing, proofreading. So go ahead.
It's 614-353-6978.
And if someone has an idea or in a manuscript already, what should they do? How should they approach you, or does it matter?
Call or email me and say, hey, I have this manuscript. Will you take a look at it? I want to have it copy edited, whatever their need may be to get to the next step. And we'll have a conversation about that. And on my website, I'm definitely going to post those steps that I shared with you guys earlier about having
right.
your work published, the completed work. So, yeah, just call me and let's talk.
So, final words. What final words of wisdom for people who are, as we said, they are an expert and maybe too technical, and they're writing, they don't have time, or they don't like it, they're not good at it. What are your final words of wisdom for people in that category, or someone is just even interested in writing a book and doesn't even know where to start? Final words of wisdom.
Final words of wisdom. Find a ghostwriter that you feel comfortable with, that you feel you can trust with your story, and commit. You're going to have to commit to the process, and there definitely are fees involved with that, but it's a very doable thing that can happen. But you're going to have to commit, and that's where people, I think, sometimes don't really understand that you need to put the time in to work closely with your ghostwriter.
So the book doesn't write itself. You still have to commit something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So those are my final words of wisdom. I hope that they fell upon wisdom-seeking ears.
I think so.
Well, much wisdom.
Yeah.
So
right?
We
like
really appreciate you taking... I'm sorry. Say that again, Lori.
I said there's much wisdom in this. It's like Harry Potter.
Ah, okay.
Where you have the wizard and you're getting your wisdom from all the things. All right. Anyway, it was a bad joke. Sorry.
I didn't
carry
see Harry Potter, so I'm sorry.
Hey, listen. I was trying to work with you, girl. I really was.
I didn't read the books. I never saw the movie. So you just did some magic right over my head. I know Harry Potter deals with magic. That's all.
And for everyone listening out there, that's a first, because usually Ted's over my head. So this was
yeah.
fun. Thank you, Lisa.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I hope I answered all of your questions.
You did.
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
thank
guys.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks for accepting the invitation to join us, Lisa. Enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. You gave some really
Happy
valuable
holidays.
Information. Yep. And, hey, enjoy the holidays, Lisa.
I will. You do the same. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Everyone,
have a good one.
Evening.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.